I just kind of like hit myself over the head, like, you know, this kind of stinks. And there is a path forward that can involve, you know, dealing with it in a more mature way than like having a tantrum, which I felt like I was kind of having.
I'm Julie Rose, and this is Top of Mind. I have been a radio journalist for 2 decades, but a few years ago, I found myself avoiding the news for long stretches because of how depressing and divisive it all seems. I still wanted to be informed and engaged on important issues, though, and I figured I couldn't be alone in that. So we created this podcast. Each week, we tackle one tough topic in a way that will challenge you, help you feel more empathy, and empower you to become a better citizen, a kinder neighbor, and a more effective advocate. Today, dealing with the discovery that your best efforts aren't enough. I'm joined by health coach Carolyn Cohen. She's host of the podcast Wellness While Walking, and she's going to share a stick-with-it story about doing everything right with her food choices and still getting some bad news from the doctor. Carolyn, welcome. I'm so glad to have you with us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Julie. I'm so excited to be here.
So Stick With It is a conversation series here on Top of Mind, where we get ideas on how to stay open and curious in the face of information that challenges us. Maybe it's some tough feedback. Maybe it's talking about politics with somebody or just spending time outside of our comfort zone. And the bottom line is it takes practice to stay humble, to stay curious in that moment instead of getting defensive or shutting down. And Top of Mind's topic-based episodes are a chance to practice engaging with perspectives that challenge us. But these stick-with-it conversations are where we get to see how this looks in daily life. So with that said, Carolyn, let's dive into your stick-with-it story. What's the background that we need to know?
Well, I'm excited to share it with you. It does go back quite a few decades. I was raised by a health nut mom who was kind of ahead of her time. And her goals were keeping my father alive. And good news, he is still alive. But a lot of the men in his family in particular died early of heart disease. So she really had a vested interest in kind of having us live as healthfully as possible. And what that looked like to me, who was kind of, I don't know, like collateral damage in a way, was that I had none of the foods my friends were eating. You know, I would go over to their house and just be so excited or, you know, look at their lunch boxes, and I didn't have any of that.
So what, like no junk food, obviously, but not even some stuff that a lot of us wouldn't even consider junk food?
Exactly. Like carbohydrates were pretty much out. She called them starches. They were not good. You know, really, like it was all something that I could only get outside the home.
Wow.
And as I ended up having a little more leeway, I lived in a remote area. But when I would occasionally be able to go to town, say after middle school, I would like start to buy candy, which I hoarded. And then I went to sleepaway camp and I ended up eating white squishy bread with butter. I never had that before. And I ate it at the beginning of every meal. And looking back on it, as like somebody with a business background, they were trying to reduce the cost of the meals for each kid. But for like, you know, so they would have to eat less food if they loaded up on bread and butter. For me, this was like the best thing that ever happened. Unfortunately, by the time visiting day came around, my parents had to bring like a new wardrobe for me. Oh, so it was kind of...
It made that big of a difference that quickly
you. Yeah. Well, I mean, there were other things too. There was like canteen, which had candy. There were a lot of things that I just wasn't exposed to. And even though you're active as a kid at camp, it wasn't enough.
So what did that look like then as you became an adult and maybe had a little more control over your environment?
Exactly. So like that, you know, sort of kicked off a couple of decades of really battling my weight. And when I did become more in control of my, you know, actions, I sort of decided that I wasn't going to go down that road. Like, I didn't really think health mattered. You know, here I had been sort of deprived for many years as a kid, and I didn't really notice that my friends who had yodels and, you know, ding-dongs and other things in their house all the time, I didn't really notice that they were any... you know, less healthy than I was. So I was like, this is just not that fun. I mean, I really, you know, I it was like a conscientious will to rebel. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And not only did I do that, but I ended up working. My first job was in advertising, and my clients all were in the kind of processed food industry. So
interesting. You're right in the belly of the beast.
I'm selling it to people. I'm not just eating it all the time. Like, I'm literally marketing it to others.
Yeah. I mean, does this extend even to like when you started having kids and kind of you know, adult life that you were living?
Honestly, had it not been for my kids, I might have still been on that path. I did myself first get a diagnosis of IBS and irritable bowel syndrome. But what really got me to sort of change my perspective the first time was when my kids started getting diagnoses. Like, there were a lot of people at that point questioning, not professionals necessarily, more lay people who were kind of like, what is going on with our world that there were a lot of A diagnoses, like things that start with A, like allergies and asthma and ADHD and autism and things that people, you know, were seeing such a jump in that people did start asking questions. And so did I. You know, I started to kind of think like maybe I had gone too far of an extreme, and that rebellion, you know, really wasn't where I needed to be to have the family that, you know, the healthy kids and family that I wanted, okay. Not to mention my own self. Yeah.
So what was the path you took at that point then?
So I did change behavior. I just posted on social media recently a picture of one of my kids as a toddler, like standing in front of our pantry with just the hugest array of packaged foods there. And that was before I had sort of, you know, realized kind of what I needed to do.
I think the title had something to do with Cheetos, right? I'm like, yes, don't take my, like, I don't eat Cheetos every day, but I will never turn one down.
I'm the same way. And I don't think we have to. And that's, you know, that's a beautiful thing, I think.
Yeah.
But I did, you know, the preponderance of the food that came into our house was not fully unprocessed, because I did, you know, not want to do what had happened to me. I didn't want to make it so crazy off limits. But I had my little tricks, you know, like where I could get them kind of bored of it by buying kind of the same thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. And the variety wasn't there. So like, even though they had junk food, it just wasn't the allure wasn't there that they kept eating it. Mm-hmm. And I made a lot of things on my own, and I bought better versions of things. And I, you know, I kind of modeled, you know, what being healthy looked like, hoping that that would sort of, you know, rub off. And we did a lot better. Things were a lot better.
Health improved. And you were feeling better as a family.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. But this was, exactly. I mean, you say you did little things, so you were trying not to go as far as you had been raised in the way that you had mm-hmm. been raised, but also like, this was work. I mean, it wasn't, it still had to have felt like change, like sacrifices, like there were things you were missing or more work you were having to do.
It's definitely can be challenging. And I think the unfortunate thing that I don't think I realized for a very long time is that our culture is not set up to have us be healthy. Mm. The default mode kind of that we would fall back on and think is normal and typical often will lead us to be unhealthy. And so it's a lot having, it's not just food. Like it's, you know, it's our kind of culture of working 24/7, being on call, you know, not prioritizing sleep and not having a plan for stress management and not necessarily having community, which brings us so much. So it's not just the food, but certainly like when there's free food and the food that's cheap is subsidized and it's readily available. I mean, you know, a lot of us don't have access to, you know, great grocery stores or farmers markets. And so we're getting food on the run, like maybe from the convenience store. And it's a challenge to eat well in many situations. So I just think like part of what I was learning about was that you kind of have to go out of your way. And while it's not necessarily terrible, it can be quite fun and rewarding. And feeling good is like the best reward. But it does often have to be intentional.
Right. So that kind of sets us up then for the stick with it moment that we're going to talk about here, where you had to kind of decide to stay uncomfortable and to stay open and curious when you really didn't want to. So what happened?
Well, so the passion of, you know, approximately 20 years turned into something that was going to be my career. I was able to participate in one of the first health coach training programs. And a health coach is really somebody who we don't diagnose, we don't, you know, come up with regimens. What we do is help people make the changes that either they've wanted to make and have been unable to, or perhaps that their doctor or other healthcare team member has asked them to make and not given a lot of clear information. So we deal with, you know, kind of behavior change and motivation. And so that I was so excited to actually have this career because I knew how, you know, much I had been able to change our lives, right? So all's good, kind of like walking the talk, helping even other people on their health journeys. Like I was coaching, I was working in my community. And then I decided to be proactive and address something that I had had as a health challenge for quite a while, which was that I always had these low-level allergies. A lot of them were seemingly environmentally based. So like, you know, dust and mold and mildew, things that are hard to kind of avoid. And I just always had to carry a tissue with me and I was sniffly and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to get on top of this. And I had heard about a good allergist in my town and I went to him. And surprisingly, as an allergist, he wanted to do a 3-hour glucose tolerance test on me.
Blood sugar.
And yes, blood sugar. And I'm like, you know, like, okay, this seems like, I don't know, not what I was expecting, even as, you know, somebody who was pretty involved with health. And I was like, well, my fasting blood sugar is pretty good. And I, you know, we have no diabetes in the family. And we, you know, I had 4 pregnancies. I never was even close to having gestational diabetes. So like, do I have to? And his answer was, yes, if you want to work with me, you do. And what he had noticed as a conventionally trained physician in the field of allergies was that so many of his patients ended up having blood sugar dysregulation issues like prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. And in fact, there are like millions of people and billions around the world who don't know that they are walking around with either prediabetes or full-blown type 2 diabetes.
Yeah.
And so he just felt like he couldn't continue to practice medicine without incorporating this into his practice. It was really not what I expected at all, but he made a lot of sense, so I did it.
And
I was really shocked to get the diagnosis of prediabetes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really borderline. It was right smack in the middle of the range. And, you know, I was kind of thrown for a loop, let's just say.
I mean, in what way? Know, like, how did you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't, it wasn't like, I wasn't the person I expected to be diagnosed with prediabetes, you know? Like, that didn't fit my kind of the model of how health worked, you know? Like, I was normal weight, I was obviously eating healthy, I was moving my body, and I didn't really feel like I had any symptoms, although there were probably a couple that I wasn't paying attention to. Mm. And, you know, like, awareness is, like, a huge part of this thing, you know, when you're like thrown into something, it's like you can have like kind of ignored some of the things that might have been tapping you on the shoulder.
Yeah.
So
what was your instinct? I mean, what were you feeling? Like, what, you were surprised, but what were your other emotions in this stick with it moment where you're kind of smack in the face with this information that you were not ready for and that I'm sure was not welcome news?
No, not great news, right? Yeah, I guess in addition to just surprise, like I felt like my confidence was undermined in terms of not just working with people, because like, how could I help somebody if I couldn't even help prevent my own diagnosis of prediabetes?
So a little bit of embarrassment then, oh gosh, I'm so ashamed.
it was embarrassing, like, yeah. You know, and also just, I had made this very intentional pivot, you know, a real decision to kind of say like, all right, I was wrong, you know, about my rebelling phase. And here I was like, kind of just saying like, well, maybe not so much. And kind of just feeling like at my wit's end, you know, just feeling like, what is the right thing to do?
And so what were your choices at that moment then?
Yeah, you know, I didn't really consider all my choices in a very measured way. I really just went to kind of like, I give up, kind of, I forget, you know, like, forget it. Like, I just don't even know what the right direction is. And I was kind of in a tailspin, I guess, is the best way to characterize it.
Yeah.
And so the first thing I did was kind of go on a bender, a little food bender.
A Cheeto bender? You know,
did not involve anything orange and
crunchy,
fluorescent. But I mean, I ate like a boatload of popcorn, which is kind of my, like one of my favorite foods. And it, you know, honestly, like it does a number on my blood sugar. Like when I eat popcorn, it makes me want to go to sleep. But I kept eating it regardless. And I ate a lot of ice cream. And that also wasn't really so great for me. And I didn't really talk about it with anybody. I don't even think I told my husband that I had had the diagnosis for weeks. Mm. And
so you really weren't confronting it then. I mean,
oh no.
there were a couple of paths, I guess, that you could have taken at that point. And one would be like, okay, well, what do I have to do? You know, let me dig in. Or just the instinct, which I think most of us can relate to, which happens in these stick with it moments, is I'm going to deny, I'm going to dismiss, I'm going to bail out, I'm going to get defensive, kind of ignore it, sort of all of the things, right? You chose that path initially.
I did. I didn't even feel like it was a choice. It just was like what I did, you know?
It's just your instinct, sure. That's how it so often is for us. Like we do, oftentimes I do find with these, you know, stick with it moments in life, like it's not that we choose not to be defensive. Like we actually do indulge in that for a little while. Mm-hmm. The question is really how long do we let that go on?
Yes.
before we sort of backpedal and decide to stay curious and maybe humble.
Right. Oh, so humble. Oh my gosh. Which is kind of the driving force behind everything that's happened since, which is, you know, great.
Yeah.
So yeah, the first thing that happened is I really noticed I didn't feel as good as I had been for years at this point. You know, like I definitely felt like I had digestive issues. Like I was aware that I didn't feel good. I wasn't sleeping well and I had brain fog where I hadn't had that in a very long time. And so that was the first thing. And then the second thing was like, I really loved my career and what I was doing. And I really couldn't, you know, continue to do what I was doing and approach, you know, my diagnosis in this way and help other people. I mean, that wasn't going to work. So I needed to reconcile that and eliminate that cognitive dissonance. But the thing that I remember happening, which I can like so picture it, is that there was a book on my desk that came that I had pre-ordered when I'd heard about it. And then you know how it kind of just shows up. And it was called The Obstacle is the Way. And it's a, you know, it's just been out like 10 years. But the sentiment is an old one from like Marcus Aurelius, who's like, where basically says like the hard thing is actually the, you know, the exact path that you need to take. Mm-hmm. And I had always kind of collected thoughts like that, you know, not just to help my clients harness their own strengths and their abilities and their resilience. But I was raising like 4 girls, you know, like, and I really wanted them to be strong women. And it was always something I was talking about with them. And, you know, I remember stories that we read that kind of had that as the, you know, the moral. And so I just kind of like hit myself over the head, like, you know, this kind of stinks. And there is a path forward that can involve, you know, dealing with it in a more mature way than like having a tantrum, which I felt like I was kind of having.
And so what did you discover then as you leaned into it? Did the actual work of it that you were, you know, reluctant to do or frustrated, that frustrated you at the prospect, right? Did that work turn out to be as complicated or as hard as you had expected?
No, that's the other thing. Like, no, not at all. It wasn't that hard. I mean, I think there was one thing that if I had been more wedded to what I was doing, and people are, that might have been challenging. So this doctor obviously had dealt with a lot of people who had had this surprise diagnosis of either prediabetes or type 2 diabetes because he did this testing, and there's so many of us out there. So he had a very strong suggestion, which I took, which could have been hard if I were more wedded to my approach. So my approach for the past several years at that point had been to be a vegetarian. And even though it's very, very possible to get your protein needs met from being a vegetarian, it's harder than it is from being a carnivore, and so, or an omnivore, I should say. So his strong recommendation was to reintroduce more animal protein into my diet. So that could have been hard if I were more wedded to being a vegetarian, but I was okay with not doing that anymore. So that one might have been hard. But the other things were small, like really small. So one thing was kind of changing how I ate my carbohydrates. So like I'll now say like, don't eat naked fruit, which is not the same as don't eat fruit while naked, because I think that's okay, but might be a little messy.
Or at least it shouldn't affect your blood sugar.
Exactly.
So what does it mean to eat naked fruit?
So naked fruit, or any really naked carbs, are when you just eat them by themselves. So like my typical thing had been to eat like often a pretty big apple in the middle of the afternoon, right? Like, but now I realized like what that was doing to my blood sugar, which, you know, is very invisible to us most of the time, unless it really gets to being a crisis situation, which for me it was not. But it's much better to eat fruit or anything that is, you know, quickly absorbed by the body and seen as sugar or become sugar quickly, like, you know, white rice, that kind of thing, with some other things. So like with protein and maybe with fiber. So like instead of having an apple in the afternoon, I switched to having cottage cheese, which works well for me. I like it with some fruit. And then like I ended up loving all kinds of seeds. So like then that provides a little fiber. So those kinds of little swaps, and like still
so
have
you
fruit.
Could do like maybe peanut butter with your mm-hmm. apple,
yep.
or like a handful of almonds,
exactly.
and
yep.
a part of a banana, something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So there's just like just okay. being a little more careful about pairing, which at some point I think I had dismissed as ridiculous, you know. So there's another kind of ding 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 moment where you're like, I've been kind of closed-minded about this. I've heard of people talking mm-hmm. about pairing foods and I didn't really pay attention. So in this case, it was kind of just like, make sure that like you're kind of moderating the blood sugar, and that comes from intentionally pairing your, you know, the food with something else. So that was one thing.
Yeah.
And then a second thing that I think is so fascinating, which has, since I started doing it, has been even more further supported in the research, which is that like moving your body after you've had a meal can help usher the blood sugar, the sugar that's circulating in your blood, into the cells, and specifically into, you know, muscle fiber cells. So when we move around after we've eaten, it really can help balance our blood sugar. And like, how easy is it just to not know that and eat and move your body and then have your meal? Like, you know, who knew, yeah. right? Like, so, and that's just been increasingly borne out since I started doing it. So those are small things. And I ended up within 6 months, which is the next time we tested it, and we tested it in a couple of different ways at that point, I was back into the non-pre-diabetic range. So it wasn't that hard. It was tweaks, yeah. you know.
Which I imagine was quite a relief. Obviously, there were health benefits for you. Was there any other payoff as a result of deciding to stick with it in this case?
For sure. Big ones, actually. So the biggest of which, and the most impactful in my life, and I've been so happy that this happened, was the idea of starting a podcast. Because what I really wanted to bring to people was, you know, a sense of balance about health, and that, like, you know, a lot of power lies in our small steps. And I think there's, you know, so much dogma and extremes presented, and there is another path, like, that might work for some people. It might work for your neighbor, whatever they've, you know, done a 180-degree pivot on. And but that doesn't mean it's right for us, you know, and there are so many options. So, and so I really got past I was always a huge podcast listener myself. I used to love listening to talk radio. But when it came time to get my message out, I was like, oh, I'll write a blog. Like, you know, it was such a ridiculous thing for me to do, because I loved podcasts so much, and I especially loved that it's a rare opportunity in our lives to actually multitask in a way that's effective. Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful when you're walking or out there doing anything and listening to something. Of course, you have to be mindful of safety, but it really is pretty possible to listen to something and walk, or listen to something and chop vegetables, you know? So it was like, I really don't want people sitting at their desks more and want reading my blog. So I knew I had to start the podcast, which was not the easiest thing in the world for me.
Yeah. And it's really imbued with this idea of, you know, little steps can get us someplace. And also the multitasking, which is great. So just describe what the conceit is of wellness while walking.
Yeah. So the design of it is that it is, you know, slightly designed to be listened to while walking, in that it's about 30 to 40 minutes. People walk throughout the day, get tons of steps in throughout the day. But oftentimes when they're intentionally walking, it's a walk that's about 30 minutes that they plan to do. So this is 30 to 40 minutes, and there's a beep played halfway through each episode to remind anyone who's walking out and back to turn around.
How many times have I done that, that I've just been engrossed in a podcast because I have to listen to something while I'm running or walking, because otherwise I just won't hang in there.
And it's so, a great pairing,
then
honestly.
I end up, I'm listening and I'm moving along and I'm super engaged. And then all of a sudden I realize I'm like way the heck out there.
So funny. I think it's common.
I've gone way too far.
It's so funny. I didn't allot that much time because now I've got to walk back. So that's, you know, it's kind of like a fun kind of tweak to help people see that it can be truly listened to while walking. But of course, it doesn't have to be. And I guess in addition to kind of the metaphor of like steps and small steps, there's also the message that like, if you want to run, that's awesome. You know, if your body's happy with it and you love it, then run. But if it doesn't work for you for whatever reason, walking is also really awesome. And I think that there's so many extreme, you know, extreme exercise voices, extreme, you know, food voices. And like, I just want to be kind of the voice of like, you can choose your own path and it can be fun and it can involve small steps and you will feel better. And that, you know, that was something I wasn't really seeing out there in the ether as much. So that's really was the biggest outcome. And that
made you better. It sounds like it's also made you a better coach.
For sure. 100%.
And even just being able to empathize with people who have a prediabetes or a diabetes, you know, I could imagine prior to your own diagnosis, like, it is pretty easy in our society to judge folks who have that
Absolutely.
Kind of a diagnosis as, well, you must be doing something terrible.
Yes. Right? And it's
to
not
bring
even,
this on yourself.
Exactly. And like, oh, you could do more. But like, even like, let's just say there's somebody who has high blood pressure and they've taken steps to reduce like ultra processed food and sugar and they're moving more and so on, and they still have high blood pressure. Like, that's okay. You know what I mean? Like, maybe there's a chance that you would have even higher blood pressure. Maybe your medicine dose would have to be even higher. Like, all these things that seem like they're not successes are successes. Yeah. So I think that came for sure out of my own experience.
Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for sharing your story. I've really enjoyed talking with you today.
It's been great to speak with you as well.
Carolyn Cohen is a health coach and host of the podcast Wellness While Walking, which you can find on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to podcasts. I would love to hear about a stick with it story in your life, about a time when you encountered a perspective or a situation that challenged your way of seeing things, and you found a way to stay curious in that rather than get defensive or shut down. How'd that come about? What was the result of sticking with that discomfort? You can email us topofmind@byu.edu. I read and respond to every email that we get, so please reach out. We love hearing from you. And be sure to check out our topic-based episodes on the Top of Mind podcast feed. We are here to help you engage with tough topics in a way that gives you practice sticking with the discomfort of challenging perspectives. Our most recent episode gave me a stick with it moment, really kind of forced me to take a hard look at why I am so annoyed when I'm ordering food at the counter and the cashier shows me that screen, you know, the one that asks how much I want a tip. Seriously, what have you done to deserve a tip, asking for my order and typing it into your machine? You didn't even cook the stuff. I don't understand what's happening here. Well, one of the conversations in that latest episode really opened my eyes to this issue in a different way. I hope you're having similar experiences with the podcast. And by the way, if you know someone else who might enjoy Top of Mind, please share it with them on social media or text them a link. It's a great way for us to get the word out to others. I'm Julie Rose. We'll talk soon. Hey, it's Julie. There is another podcast I think you're going to like from the BYU Radio family of podcasts, so I wanted to pass along the word. It's called In Good Faith. Join host Stephen Cap Perry as he connects with believers from various religions, Christians, Buddhists, Jews, Muslims, and much, much more. Listening to their captivating stories is an opportunity to deepen our own understanding of faith, religion, and spirituality. Plus, Stephen is really well-traveled, and his global perspective brings a unique richness to each conversation. Elevate your appreciation for the divine with In Good Faith. It's an inspiring journey of unity and enlightenment. Listen anywhere you get podcasts.